You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hi, this is Mike Peskin for Leonard Lopate. 1977 was a time between huge milestones for the gay rights movement. It was 8 years after Stonewall. It was 5 years before the word AIDS was coined. It was also the year of a film called Word Is Out, Stories of Some of Our Lives. It was the first feature-length documentary about gay and lesbian individuals. It was also directed entirely by a collective of gay filmmakers. And upon release, it was seen as an essential piece of the 70s gay rights movement. 33 years later, the film has been preserved. It is being shown in a special revival engagement at the Anthology Film Archives starting this Saturday, and I'm pleased that it brings Veronica Selver, one of the directors, as well as one of the subjects, David Gillen, and also with us in studio is SiriusXM radio host and author of Queer in America, Sex, the Media, and the Closets of Power, Michelangelo Signorilli. Everyone, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
So let me ask you, Veronica, how or who hatched the concept for the film?
Peter Adair hatched the concept for the film. Peter was a gay man, gay young man in his early 30s. He was a filmmaker, and he was interested in doing what he really finally did exactly. He had an idea that it would be valuable and important for gay people to hear from each other. It was a time when the gay movement was beginning to have some visibility, but not nearly the kind of visibility that it has now, or that Peter felt would be valuable to gays. So he conceived of an idea of a film where a gay group of filmmakers would interview one-on-one gay subjects about growing up in the United States. It was an American film, North American film, and talking to camera about their experience. And he had also conceived of the form, which was to intercut these stories and to tell a collective tale, a coming out.
And how'd you cast it?
Well, the big difference from his initial conception to what finally happened is that was the scale of it. Mm-hmm. So that the original cast, we Peter and Nancy, his sister Nancy was also gay. They went out and they pre-interviewed friends of theirs, people in the community in the Bay Area, which is where they lived, and then I sat down with them and looked at those tapes, and we brought in two other filmmakers. I mean, they weren't filmmakers, but they were gay men, Andrew Brown and Rob Epstein. And we chose 8 people to interview from that group of pre-interviews that Peter and Nancy did. And the 8 people were simply people we found interesting. We had no idea about doing something that was as diverse as the film became. We just liked these characters. We filmed them. We went back and filmed them in 16, put a cut together, and showed it to the community. We had a screening of a rough cut. Mm-hmm. And it's at that moment that we realized that we needed to, it was going to be a big movie,
and
in the sense that it was going to speak for the first time, really, to gays, and to kind of help define, if you want, a kind of gay identity.
And you expanded it out to, did you set on a number? Did you try to approach 100 people and whittle it down to the final 26 who were in it?
Well, we then went across the country. We each of us had a little port-a-pack of videotape machine, and we pre-interviewed.
A big port-a-pack judged against
today's.
Yes, a
big port-a-pack, a very unwieldy
equipment. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the 6 of us sat down, and for 2 weeks, that's all we did was look at tapes, look at each other's tapes, and look. And we chose people all along the way, I must say. The last person we interviewed was probably, 2 months before the film was done. So we filled holes, if I may put it that way, along the way. But at that time, when we sat together and looked for 2 weeks, we probably gathered about 20 people,
David,
you know, all together.
One of those people is with me here, David Gillen. How'd you become involved in the project?
Well, it was a very chance sort of encounter with one of the filmmakers, with Rob Epstein. By the way, hello, Veronica.
Hi, David.
I love these filmmakers. They're wonderful people who had a brilliant idea and with great execution produced a great film. But to answer your question, I was at one of my usual haunts in Western Massachusetts, and Rob was introduced to me by somebody from the town I lived in. And we did a short video on the huge video pack that he had carried with him. And it was, I thought nothing of it.
Did he pitch it as, we want to get your life story as a gay man? Did he say, we want to ask you about political questions? How did he describe his project?
You know, that's a good question. I don't remember. But the point to me seemed to be, let's speak up. At the time, it's still true now, but at the time, certainly the most powerful, simple thing that gay people could do was to speak up. And Rob told me something about his film that he was envisioning, and I thought nothing of it, to be honest with you. But I did see an opportunity to speak up, and I thought that was an important thing to do. It was about the only thing that an individual could do then, and I liked the idea. It was a huge surprise to me when he came back to me some months later and said, we want to, you know, shoot a film using real film. Then suddenly it became something to think about.
Did you perceive any risk? Were you out? What about being, you know, even if you're out to friends and family, the public knowing who you were?
Yeah. Well, you know, in this kind of two-step process where I sit and say something in front of a videotape that nobody in the world would ever see, I thought, that was an easy decision to make. But when it came time to say yes to being on a film that obviously some people had money to produce and was probably going to be shown to somebody in the public, that gave me a pause for a moment. But as I said, I had tremendous faith in what I knew of Rob and what his plans were, as sketchily as I can remember them now. And I had faith that that Rob and friends were up to something good. So I thought about it actually on the phone in the kitchen of my family house with my father listening some distance away. It was kind of a hard conversation to have, so I couldn't go into the details over the phone with filmmaker Rob Epstein. I worked it out in my head in about 15 seconds and said, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
And Michael Signorelli, you, I guess, represent the audience at the time, or you saw it first a couple years later?
Well, yeah, I was a teenager at the time when this film came out, so I don't remember anything about the film at the time when it came out.
And where were you living, by the way?
I was living here in New York.
Okay, so you could have
grew
seen
up
it,
in
but,
New York
yeah,
City.
Yeah.
Staten Island and Brooklyn, and I was kind
well,
of... I think
Staten
for
Island.
A lot of people, you know... the issue of being gay at that time was something you really had to search out for. Even as this film got a lot of publicity at the time, it was still something that wasn't focused on in the media. I saw it in the 80s when I began writing about the closet and what it's like for people to come out, and writing about the experiences people have. And it's interesting watching it just in the last few days again. It's really amazing how the stories carry through and resonate, and how, for all the progress we've made, the basic issues of coming out, dealing with family, dealing with religion, dealing with work, dealing with the people in your life, it's still the same. It still carries through even several decades later.
But there are elements, and I guess there'll be a DVD soon, and there was a bonus disc, and I think it was Mr. Epstein who said it couldn't be made today because there were so many things that were very specific to the era. And I was thinking about there were a couple of these subjects, and one of them, in harrowing detail, talks about how he was hospitalized and I think given shock therapy. So that doesn't go on today, but...
Well, we have. I think people sometimes don't realize, for all the progress we've had, also had the growth of the Christian right the same time. And kids in those families are growing up, and they're gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And their parents are often putting them into the so-called ex-gay therapy programs. They might not be using shock treatment, but they're using conversion therapy that damages them, that the American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association has condemned. So it really does still resonate, even that aspect.
Veronica, was it important that you get a theatrical release so that gay and straight people could see it? And who was your intended audience?
Our intended audience was, first and foremost, other gay people. I mean, we really did make it for, if I can put it that way, we really did make it for ourselves and for each other. Of course, you know, all of us, each of us making it, had very close connection with the straight world. I mean, for example, I have to say that I always had my mother in mind when I was making the film. So, you know, we each had straight people in our lives that we wanted the film to speak to, but our audience was primarily, we did this for, to help each other come out. And I think one of the, you know, one of the rewards, and one of the unexpected, I should say, even rewards of the film, is that it did transcend the gay identity issue, and it really did speak to a much broader population of people for whom the process of becoming who one is. You know, isn't it just a given? Isn't always easy? There are all kinds of ways in which it's difficult to assert one's identity and desires and being. So the film really spoke to other people's experiences. I mean, intimate experiences as well. And it also, of course, opened up a door to understanding and hearing from gay people that straight people also hadn't heard.
Interestingly, if you Google the name of your movie and the word documentary, the first thing that comes up is a review from 1977 by Janet Maslin in the New York Times, and she gave it a very good review. A couple of the phrases seem dated now, talking about the strident lesbian, who to me didn't seem, you know, strident at all. Maybe we just weren't used to lesbians like that or the portrayal thereof. But did it do well in the theaters? Was there momentum afterwards, or was it mostly, I mean, did it do well financially for you? You ever make back your money?
No. No, and I think, again, I think that was kind of a surprise. I have to say that Peter Adair, who really needs, unfortunately, Peter died in 96. He died of AIDS. But he was really masterminding this, as well as kind of masterminding the distribution and the producing of the film. And he had great expectation that the film would make its money back, and we would be able to pay back the people who contributed and lent money to the film. It had a theatrical run. It got wonderful press. And yet, you know, it already suffered from what documentary films suffer from, which is it's very difficult to make money when you produce and make a documentary. And that was true despite the theatrical run and the good reviews but you know, we were on television. I think TV bought the film, but not. We never made money on it. Let me put it that way.
David, did the film help you in terms of explaining yourself to anyone? Did you tell people to see the film, get to know me a little better via this film?
Well, you know, I really didn't have to tell people to see this film. I was living in Boston at the time when it was released, and I've never gotten so much attention in my life. I remember the first few day after it was released, I went jogging down by the Charles River in Boston, a great place to jog, and people stopped and looked and pointed at me. It was a phenomenon in the time. The Orson Welles Cinema in Cambridge nearby my house, ran it for something like 14 weeks. It might have been a third, even more than that. And it generated tremendous amounts of attention within Boston. Now, I was living in a city where there were gay communities. There were large numbers of gay people. Outside of that, I have no idea what kind of reaction there was. But among gay people, it really was an event. That was something really to experience.
Were there any negative consequences to the notoriety?
No, I can't say that there were. I'm uncomfortable with people paying that much attention to me. I don't know what to do with it. But I think that that's a common problem for somebody who appears on, you know, on TV or something. But it was a new experience.
No, not the new range of people on TV. I don't think Snooki says the same thing. Veronica, what about some of your other subjects you followed? How close in touch did you keep? And did good things or bad things happen to any of them as a result?
We kept in very close touch with a number of them, not with all of them, but on the DVD, there are DVD extras, and the DVD extras are, we went back and did short interviews with all the people who are still alive. So we were extremely fortunate and grateful to find everyone. Only two didn't want to participate anymore, and of course a number of them died. But I didn't hear from any single person negative consequences whatsoever. I mean, it just no one spoke of those. No one, several people actually came out to their parents in the course of being in the film, because we have one person, you know, her parents saw it on TV before she told them. But these were all, you know, ultimately positives. And there were no reports of negative consequences.
And in some of my watching of that, there was the couple who was the lesbian couple who were introduced by the Avon lady. I think they're still a couple. They seem to be going strong and, you know, have only strengthened their bonds. One of the women who you interviewed as a lesbian then isn't a lesbian now. So that was interesting also.
Yes, and one of the two people who chose not to be re-interviewed, one of them is married to a man, and I think she may have put this part of her life behind her and didn't want to reopen it.
Yeah.
So that would have made it another person who's no longer a lesbian, I guess.
So the name of the film is The Word Is Out, but it's not literally a film about coming out, because some were out and some weren't. It's a film about the gay experience. But what about that as an issue? Before we went on the air, Michelangelo, you were talking with David, and you had briefly started talking about, you know, how the film or how the issues are the same and different. What about the issue of coming out? It's become a lot more politicized, right?
I think for a lot of people now, it is something that they think about and have enormous support to do, and certainly have a lot of people who are going to be there for them. And they know that there's a movement out there that is very big and certainly very supportive. And that's what was different, certainly, from 30 years ago. You have much more support now from society at large. You have politicians who support people who are gay. So that is different for people, but there's still this same experience that's there, that is all about how we grow up in this society and are pushed into the closet and don't have that ability to identify who we are until later in life. And we're all growing up with that homophobia, and that is very much the same. I think, David, you would agree.
I think so, too. I think so, too. The kinds of things that, as individuals, we go through are, in this different context of 2010, wind up being a lot the same. You know, you need to decide on a daily level whether you're going to come out, how much you're going to come out, to whom you're going to reveal your sexuality. If you're a young man, it's a decision. You know, if you're at the point in your life when you want to make a choice about your sexuality or do something with your sexuality, those are weighty decisions. And I can't imagine that they're any easier now than they were 30 years ago. Of course, you know, the consequences of coming out, the worry about what might happen if you come out, that's a different story. Years ago, it was there were all kinds of consequences, some of them pretty horrible, if you came out. And there's a whole generation of people who have experienced that. You know, you talked about institutionalization. You talked about family estrangement. Of course, there are no gays in the military back then, and to our great national shame, there are no gays. Well, there's don't ask, don't
who
tell.
Who can tell about
yeah,
it, yes.
None today, in theory. So things have changed, and they have not.
The name of the movie is Word Is Out. It will be shown at the Anthology Film Archive starting tomorrow. I have been speaking with Veronica Silver, one of the directors of that documentary. Also joining me was David Gillen, who's featured in the film, Michelangelo Signorelli, who hosts the show starting just in a few minutes on satellite radio. Thank you all for being with us. And for more information about screenings, visit our show page at WNYC.org. Again, thank you all for being with
us. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.